This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 4 minutes past seven, which means we're on the other side of 7 o'clock, which means it's time for Wong Shaoling, Philip C and myself, Koo Soo Chong, to get a little bit more serious, not by much, but about
speak
the world.
Speak for yourself, Chong.
So in about 15 minutes, we'll take a look at the local car sector with Vivek Vaidya of Frost & Sullivan. But before that, markets.
Yeah, so across the board, red day in the US, Dow down 0.3%, S&P down 0.4%, NASDAQ down 0.7%. And even across to the Pacific, Nikkei was down 0.2%. However, Shanghai was up 0.6%. We'll be continuing to red territory with Hong Kong down 1.6%, Kospi down 1.5%, Australia flat, Singapore down 0.4%, and back home in Malaysia down 1.2%. Didn't really went below the 1,600 mark.
Okay, so to expand on global markets, we've got with us Carlos Casanova, the senior economist for UBP. Carlos, thanks for talking to us. Now, Jay Powell and the Fed met last night, and based on the latest minutes, when do you think conditions will be right for America to consider tapering?
Based on the latest minutes, we can see that the Fed is still not impressed with the pace of recovery in the US. They expressed that they are not going to be concerned about inflation. They're not going to start tapering to try to restrict the pace of inflation going up. In fact, they want to see inflation overshooting that target, and not in a temporary way over summer, but in a long-term sustainable way. And also the labor market recovering over the board before they start even considering tapering. So that means that they will keep their short-term borrowing rates near zero and, of course, maintain a minimum of $120 billion in asset purchases each month, at least for the remainder of 2021, potentially with there being a conversation around normalization of conditions as we head into 2022. What is, however, going to drive markets, regardless of whether the Fed or not starts tapering in 2021 or not, is, of course, that recovery narrative, which, regardless of Fed support, has already been fueling a little bit of upside risks on the US.
Yeah, so Carlos, when you say you're not impressed with the figures, what figures specifically are you referring to? Is it just purely unemployment numbers?
So, of course, there are going to be two things. The Fed continues to maintain a 2% inflation target. Now, there is a very significant base effect that is going to affect all of the economies around the world kicking in May. And that is because, as a result of the lockdown measures last year, inflation dropped significantly over the summer, starting April, May, depending on the economy you look at. That is going to lead to an overshoot in inflation globally, but especially in the US, above that 2% inflation target. Now, if the Fed was only targeting inflation, that would be significant grounds to consider tapering. However, on top of having to see inflation overshoot 2% for a significant period of time, not only temporarily over the summer, the inflation is now also targeting unemployment. And we saw that quite clearly in the minutes. And the natural rate of employment in the US is 5%. So we would have to see employment drop to below 5% or around 5% for a significant period of time, which is, of course, something that is easier said than done and is not going to happen, even if the economic recovery is better than expected this year.
But Carlos, staying on this topic of inflation, we do see some forces going on here, one of which is, of course, the stimulus checks, although I think undefined in terms of quantum. And at the same time, we're having rising oil prices and also rising commodity prices, so in terms of like wheat and corn. Doesn't that push up inflation numbers and in turn maybe shortening the Fed's horizon in terms of when they're going to raise rates?
Mm-hmm. This is a concern not only for the Fed. As I said, I don't expect that they will raise rates in 2021. But if there is, the expectation right now is that the economy is going to continue to recover in a linear trajectory globally, right? So if you compound this with some reflationary pressures on the commodity front, then that does suggest that, that conversation could start to take place sooner than expected. So potentially comments about a more hawkish stance in 2022 that take place in September, that could be a significant trigger to rejig portfolio flows globally. And of course, if you have higher inflation in the US as a result of this commodity reflationary cycle that is going to affect other economies in the world as well, which could mean that other places in the world, including Asia, might not be doing as much policy easing as potentially they could have in the absence of this increase in inflation.
Yeah, Carlos, switching to Singapore, now their budget 2021 contains a lot of ambitious goals and growth targets. But in your view, which measures will the government use for the highest multiplier effect to reach those targets?
Mm-hmm. So we saw a very, I think, prudent but also positive budget in Singapore. Remember that this budget comes on the back of a large pandemic stimulus package last year, accounting for about 30% of GDP. So for the year of 2021, they will focus predominantly on the big ticket items, the things that are going to sustain that recovery. In the case of Singapore, we see external demand and manufacturing like doing pretty well, but domestic consumption remaining in contractionary territory. So no surprises there. They announced about 550 billion in measures to sustain employment via the job support scheme. And they announced Singaporean dollar 900 million in measures to boost consumption through one-off handouts to households in a household support package. So together, those two things, as well as the decision to postpone the increase in the GST tax, which is, of course, how they plan to finance all of that spending, but it has been postponed to a later date. Together, that should help to support domestic consumption in 2021. So we do expect a return to positive territory there as a result of the budget.
And staying on Singapore, Carlos, you know that they use their currency instead of interest rates as a means of stimulating the economy. Do you see them changing the trading ban of it, though?
So with Bank Indonesia's rate cut yesterday, that marks the end of the rate cut cycle in Asia. Having said that, as I mentioned earlier, the expectations are very rosy. And all analysts do sort of project that the economy is going to recover in a linear trajectory. And the reality of managing this COVID pandemic might have some ups and downs and some bumps. So in case things are not as buoyant as expected, or we stumble into some obstacles in that global COVID-19 recovery, it is possible that central banks around Asia, including in Singapore, may have to resort again to monetary policy stimulus in order to keep their economies going. So we can't completely exclude the possibility that they will use the exchange rate regime by depreciating the Singapore dollar to try to boost activity and exports. But for the time being, the baton has been handed over to the fiscal authorities from the central banks.
I just want to shift to China, and we're seeing some credit growth being hampered there due to tight money supply conditions. Can you give us a lowdown on what's happening there? And is the PBOC tightening its screws too much?
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of talk about monetary tightening in China. Just from reading the news, it would seem like things are very tight over there. But when we look at a broad index of financial indicators, we see that despite there has been some tightening since November last year, conditions remain exceptionally accommodative. So in the context of China being one of the only economies in 2020 that didn't contract, and it's going to expand more rapidly in 2021, it begs the question of, at what speed should PBOC normalize conditions? So that it's not an if, it's a when and at what speed. So we are going to see a gradual normalization of conditions, which of course implies tightening domestically. There is a conversation surrounding the most desired pace of money growth, growth in money aggregates or M2. They're currently targeting nominal GDP. So we do expect that nominal GDP will remain around 8.5 this year with a decline in inflation. So M2 growth could drop from around 12% last year to 8.5% this year. But more likely than not, given that it's not going to be a clear trajectory for the global recovery, we do expect that it could be slightly above that number, maybe around 9 to 9.5%. Which of course would imply just a very gradual tightening of conditions with no major systemic threats to the system, but just a return to normal as things are improving there.
Yeah, Carlos, apropos the uptrend in oil prices, what is your data and forecast telling you about the impact of that on ASEAN countries, especially for Malaysia, which remains a net oil exporter?
Mm-hmm. For Malaysia, of course, this increasing commodity prices, so far it's been led by iron ore, but we do see a little bit more upside risks on oil as well in recent weeks, is good news. Less favorable news for most of the other economies in ASEAN who are net oil importers, particularly India, which is one of the, it's one of the items that drags most on its current account. However, just keep in mind that the latest spike in oil prices was brought about by adverse weather patterns in the U.S., with that polar vortex being so cold that some of the crude froze. And so it led to very large supply chain disruptions in that market. That is not likely going to be a sustainable source of upside pressure for oil. We really are looking at the reflationary recovery narrative and an increase in demand to really boost oil prices in a sustainable manner going forward. And so it's likely that we are going to see that in half two, but it might not be as fast as some of the analysts that have been looking at oil prices in the last couple of weeks are expecting.
Okay, Carlos, thank you so much for your time. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist for UBP. Now, in terms of the oil complex and the implications for, say, for example, heating in the winter, I guess it's going to have little less implication for the car industry going forward because it's all about the EV race, right? So as we read now, shares of Volkswagen are jumping in Europe. And the reason they're jumping is because there's news that they might list the Porsche, their sports car subsidiary. I think 25% of the company might be floated. And the indicative valuation is around about 20 to 25 billion euros. When you consider that valuation of a storied brand like Porsche versus Tesla, Tesla is around about 900 billion euros converted. That is insane, right?
You've got question marks about how do you value Tesla, right? Is it a technology company? Is it a car company? Exactly. What is it?
Is it a platform company?
Yeah. The joke is that GM produces 10 times the car, but Tesla has 10 times the value.
Exactly. It's insane. But I think the reason why Volkswagen want to do that is because they want to try and realize the value of Porsche and try and unlock some of that. But also to use the
proceeds. It's called financial engineering.
Called financial engineering, right?
But this reverses the acquisition they concluded in 2012 when they bought Porsche.
Yeah, so they bought the rest of...
It was a family affair.
That's right. Yeah, because they own... they've got common shareholdings with the Piëch family, right?
That's
because,
right.
Yeah, the Beetle, etc., etc. But they bought the rest of Porsche in 2012 for 4 billion odd euro. So Porsche was valued in totality at 8 billion at the time. Just what, 9 years ago. It's insane, right? It's just insane.
And I wonder how this will affect Porsche's purported plans to open a facility in Kulim.
Exactly. Ah, interesting questions.
Porsche's gonna...
Purportedly story. Don't get so excited, Chuang. I think Chuang's looking forward to his Porsche CKD.
No, I think Snow has got a better chance of surviving in hell. Okay, 7:15, we'll come back after this with discussions on the car sector with Frost and Sullivan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.